cut to the chase, okay? What are you guys selling?
If you're drowning and I throw you a life jacket, would you grab it? Yes, good. Pick up 200 shares. I won't let you down.
Pay him. Pay that man his money.
Ask them how they'd like to see 30, 40% returns. What are they going to say? No? I don't want to see those returns.
Where's the money, Lebowski?
You're going to make a lot of money, right?
Be aggressive. Learn how to push.
Show him a 3% return, and I'll trust you to watch his kids for the weekend.
I'm a big fan of money.
Move around. Motion creates emotion.
I did not know this.
That's it. I'm done.
Well, Rock Bay Action Jacks. Have some alleys, Mr. Matt Weber, on the board. We have, as soon as I find it here, we have S&P futures. We're up. We're rallying today. We're going to go back up. We were not, last week was not a good week, but today is going to be a bullish week in the market. We had a huge move in the bonds on Friday that we will talk about. S&P futures are up 34. NASDAQ futures up 140. Dow futures up 260. Now, Friday was an odd day because the Dow was actually down a whole boatload. The other stuff was up. It was amazingly mixed. The Dow was actually down 469. S&P was down 18. The NASDAQ was up. So, crazy. Frank, how are you?
Good. And you?
I am okay so far. It's early yet. You know what they say.
And you haven't even talked to me.
No, I haven't even talked to you yet. I was going to call Frank. I called Frank this weekend and to rail on him about something the liberals were doing. And, of course, he was asleep, sleeping like a liberal. Just saying. So I couldn't even really
get... Well, I have nothing to feel guilty about.
Yeah, it's just what I was thinking. That's exactly what I was thinking. He has nothing to, I was actually looking at this. I think I have it here someplace. I sent it. I was looking at this latest. I mean, I know I use the term our shorts. I'm not going to accuse the FDA. Yeah, I am. The FDA of shall we say fast tracking these vaccines, but let's face it, they are. Now, I'm not saying they're wrong. I'm just saying, well, you know, let's look at the facts. Just the facts, man. Who is that, Frank? Just the facts.
Ma'am. I'm here.
Just the facts, ma'am.
Just the facts. Right. And you were comparing apples and oranges.
Joe Friday. Just the facts, ma'am.
Well, I'm saying just facts were that the Johnson & Johnson has a different control group. The demographics of the J&J control group is different than Pfizer or AstraZeneca, or Moderna.
Okay.
So we really, the results, it's sort of, I couldn't parse anything on what the differences really were.
All right, well, as you know from the beginning, I've just been postulating, I keep using the term, I'm not going to use the, you know, frankly or whatever all the other knuckleheads use, but I'll use the term, should we say rigorous analysis is what they used to use in the University of Chicago, so it's not me. There's a little...
social science? Come on.
well, economics is not necessarily a social science. Some parts of it are. But what you...
Oh, I know.
When you are looking at... And when they... Just as a bit of a review on these other tests. Now, first of all, before I go into this, I am actually for this vaccine because I'm a believer in this new science where if you don't give people the whole virus, I don't think it's, I don't think they can get infected. Now, Carol and other people say there's other problems that could happen with it, which, you know, is true, I'm sure. But so far, I don't think that there have. But what they did with this thing is when they came out with a 90% effective, that number was absolute BS. Absolute BS. Now, I happen to think that they should be moving forward with it. But when I read it, I'm stunned that they're coming out with that number. What they did was, with all the testing, with all the lunatic fringe on the left, sorry, Frank, about how we don't know this, we don't know that. And, you know, if you say, I just had it a week ago, you shouldn't have to wear a mask. We don't know that. We don't know that. Simple fact is, if you read how these, and that every one of them now, every one of the people on the left, and I'll be beating up on the people on the right here in a second, is all for this vaccine, and you got to go get it, you got to give it to everybody. First of all, I happen to think they're correct. But the analysis is, you talk about things you don't know. You don't know anything about this vaccine. The Pfizer, which I think is the best one, just as a way of review, they took essentially 40,000 people. They said, okay, you have to get a placebo, a little something in there to make your arm sore, which I didn't realize, and the other the other 20,000 get the Pfizer. Go out there and do no harm, or do harm, or do whatever you do on a regular basis. If you have any symptoms, report back to us. From what I understand, there is absolutely no, what I've done that I read about anyway, which to me is unconscionable. How you don't take a random sample of each 20,000 piece, even if it's 200 people, and follow them, and every 3 or 4 days give them a test, and find out, A, if they got it at all, because the people that are reporting back to them have moderate to severe symptoms. If you have no symptoms, you're not gonna report back. So they didn't follow anybody. So when you with the group, you just don't know, that idiot group, you don't know anything about whether these people actually caught it or didn't catch it. You don't know whether they caught it enough to give it to somebody else or not. You just know they didn't come back with moderate to severe symptoms, which, by the way, is a huge plus. And the fact is, if nobody gets sick with it, then it's fine. I mean, everybody should take it, and everybody should be happy. But it's not...
Yet didn't the J&J come out and say that it was 72%?
I'm looking
against asymptomatic people.
I'm looking here right now. Cumulative incidence curve. This is the part one that went to the FDA. One of my double secret people that send stuff to me from the coronavirus group. Figure one: cumulative incidence curve of centrally confirmed moderate to severe critical COVID-19 cases with onset at least 1 day after vaccination. Full analysis set. Okay, so they got day zero, and they start going forward with. In the Johnson & Johnson group, there's 19,744 people, and the other group is 19,822, the placebo group. So day one, or day seven, there's 27 people that show up sick from Johnson & Johnson, but these people have already had it, right, in the first week, so it was before they got the vaccine, probably. So let's go out to day 56. There's 184 people that have reported back moderate to severe symptoms with the vaccine, 407 people that they got the placebo. So at the end of the day, there's 432 people, this is after 100 and some days, 432 people that reported back moderate to severe symptoms with the placebo and 193 with the vaccine. So that comes up to 66%. Those are the numbers they're talking about. That's it. Out of 40,000 people, 193.
Now, what's the skew between Brazil, South Africa, and the United States, the three places they tested?
This is the cumulative number.
Well, the other two weren't tested in South Africa, were they?
I don't know. But what I'm saying
is... Well, see, once again, we don't know.
Well, okay. But, I mean, you don't know... You're not going to believe me, but you don't know you're going to believe these guys.
Hey, I'll go with 196 over 472.
What I'm saying is the other one. These are the numbers we're dealing with out of 40,000. We're not chasing them down with tests. First of all, I'm a believer. Okay, and the reason why I'm a believer is because I've seen the numbers from Britain, where the people over 65 that have gotten. I believe it's most over there is the AstraZeneca and the Pfizer test. I don't think they're much on the Moderna. The amount of people over 65 coming down with the virus now is dropping like a stone because of the people who have been vaccinated. So I think it's a positive thing, but it doesn't mean that people shouldn't look and see how quickly these things are being rammed through. I'd vote for it, Frank. I'm just saying it's...
I agree, and it will get better.
This Johnson & Johnson...
It's better than doing nothing.
What I'm saying is Johnson & Johnson, if you gave me a choice, there's no way I'm taking this one. I'm going to take the Pfizer and Moderna. This is not very good. It's really almost 2-1. There's almost 200 people that got it with the vaccine and 400 without.
I would like to remind you what Chuck Yeager said. You don't concentrate on results or risks. I'm sorry, you don't concentrate on risks. You concentrate on results. No risk is too great to prevent the necessary job from getting done.
What if it was 300, 350?
Versus 472? Then it certainly didn't work.
Well, I'm saying this one's pushing it. The other one is, the Pfizer was like 490 to like 65 or something.
So what's 172 divided by 19,000? Just saying.
What do you mean?
Well, that would seem to imply some sort of rate. I don't know how they're coming up with it.
Yeah, but the placebo
I look at 172 being divided by 19,000 as being somewhere in the range of less than 1%.
See, that's why I like talking to guys from the right and the left, because they always look at things different than me. They only
look at numbers.
They only had 432 people that got it with the placebo. I mean, that's how bad, that's how sick somebody must have had to be to report. Well, my point is, Frank, you're not going to chase all 40,000 people. I know that. But how do you not have a random sample of 200 on each side that you test every 4 or 5 days and see if they actually got it or not? When you wait for people to report back, I would never report it back.
Well, see, Tom, I think I go back to thinking that perhaps we needed a Marshall Plan on this, which included, you know, certain protocols for testing these things.
But we did
not have a czar. We had Jared.
We have Jared
and Mike Pence. They were in charge.
All right.
Wrap your head
okay.
around this. Not Frank and Tom.
I was just
you and I would have done a better job.
I would ask you to. I was just arguing with right-winger all weekend. No, but. What I'm saying is this is the part that I have issue with both sides, and I don't know if Matty agrees with me or not, but the same crap you get from both sides. Nothing has changed in jamming this vaccine through since Biden took office. In fact, it's worse. I mean, you don't see Biden saying, "Where's your testing of all the other people?" They have only 600 people reporting out of 40,000. To me, is horse bleep. And again, I think you're better off with it. If you had a chance to take the Pfizer, do that one. But I'm saying these numbers are like meaningless, Frank, as a test. In normal times, would we do this for
in normal times, you don't fast track. There's the risk.
But we've got 39,500 people. We know nothing
about
it.
If we weren't fast tracking, we wouldn't have any vaccines. Let's start with that.
Well, I love the idea, and I think it was absolutely brilliant. I don't know who Trump's group came up with it, to have these guys, you know, manufacturing before it was approved, so we could start real fast. I mean, the idea that we pull this off in a year, to me, is spectacular. But
that's just the new technology. That's what they can do. It's nothing special, really.
Okay, but my point is the
mRNA technology.
My point is, I don't want the same buffoons now telling me to wear two masks, looking at these numbers, and say this is a great test.
Why do you care about masks, Tom?
Every time I put mine on when I know I don't need it, I feel like an idiot. That's why.
Well, then that calls for therapy, not refusal to wear it.
Is
that a Matty laugh?
I think that healthy people, it's unhealthy for a healthy person to wear a mask all day long.
Okay, I want to see the numbers, and not from Carl.
Okay, but you see these numbers, and you say they're okay.
I didn't say they're okay.
All right.
As I said, it's better than not having a shot.
Okay,
it's the result of an emergency.
Let's start talking. One final question. Let's talk about the market. Why wouldn't they want to survey the rest of the people? Why wouldn't you have? In other words, I look at these numbers and there's an awful lot of things that I don't know. Why don't they want to know it? They're the scientists.
Maybe they did. Maybe they didn't have the money. Maybe they didn't have the manpower.
Well, they got 40,000 people.
We don't know. Those are all good questions, Sam.
Well, okay. I'm not hearing anybody else ask him. I guess that's what's pissing me off.
Well, you and I would ask the same questions.
Yeah.
I'll just go back half a step. I'm not saying you're wrong, and I would ask the exact same questions.
Well, I'll tell you what. This graph, this piece of paper looks pretty shoddy to me. If you turned it in, if I was a professor, you'd be getting a hook. That's a seat for people who don't know. do you guys use that term hook in your age? You're much older than me. Was a C a hook?
Actually, my freshman year, they still graded by percentiles. Or not percentiles, percentages.
A.B.
Brennan was originally 88 Brennan.
Oh, well, I remember they used to mark people on the curve. That was really weird.
That's why I stopped being a math major.
I was
tired of getting a 12 on a test and an A-.
Well, the worst thing that happened to your grade point average is when they came out with the A-, because you really had to perform a sex act on somebody to get an A. They always say something was wrong, give them an A-. It's hard to...
And we went to an all-male school, so...
Yeah, yeah. I'm just saying.
So that's why I had a 3-4 great point.
You know what? It's the dumbest thing. I mean, because that was the fortunate part about it. When I went to the University of Chicago, the professors would teach when they were teaching a class, they'd teach one on campus, which in those days was in Hyde Park. I don't even think there is a business school in Hyde Park, but there might be. And then they would teach the one downtown at night. Okay. And, talk about when you went on campus, you went, 2 days a week, 75 minutes. And in downtown, you went you went 150 minutes after work in a building that wasn't even air conditioned. And they would mark the two people on the curve, the two classes. And I tell you what, talk about unfair, Frank. I mean, when you could get up, go to class, do a little studying, go to a class, go play some b-ball, go to another class, and you're right out of school. Comparing that to somebody who's working all day and have kids at home and is sitting there for 3 hours at night, I mean, it wasn't that fair.
Yet they marked, were they grading them on the same curve?
Yeah.
Did they give the same diploma? Because I remember a lot of gave a different diploma for night school.
No, they give a different diploma, I think, for the executive program at the night school. Let's just say that in my 2 years there never was anybody downtown that came anyone close to me on a result in any test in 2 years. It was not a fair game.
No, because your only responsibility was school.
Yeah. And then when I did take two classes at night in the summer, God, Frank, I hated it. God, did I hate it. I took an advanced...
Got into drinking time, didn't it?
I absolutely did. Plus, it was hotter than hinges of hell, and the place wasn't air-conditioned, the old 190
building. Did you ever go to a school with air conditioning?
I never went in a summer before.
Do you remember South Bend in May?
Yeah, but we were only there in May for a couple of weeks.
Oh, that's right. You were on that. We graduated before June.
Yeah,
we went for about a month.
No, we were out of there second week in May, third week in May.
September could be hot.
Matter of fact, I only got like 3 rounds of golf in 1 year with the weather was so lousy. Yeah, September could be hot. All right, Frank, mark it. Friday, the move in the bands was unreal. We went from I actually had a spread on in the where I was kicking myself and I was whining about it on the air Friday that I put a spread on to be short in the bands, meaning I still think these interest rates are going to go higher. So, I cheated on it. It was trading like 143, so I put on the 141 put spread in the TLT, thinking, okay, it'll sneak down the next 2 days, it'll go right to 41, I got this all figured out, and then I'll just let the one side, expire worthless, and I'll just sit along the 41 puts next week for, 70 cents or something instead of the $2 they were trading. I'll fix them. Well, of course, Friday morning, the thing's like 138. And there's no greater feeling that you're a moron than to do something on the short side, but do it in such a cheap-ass way that if it actually goes down, you lose money. I mean, it's you know that's a horrible feeling, right?
Yeah, but it's not much.
When you're right, you don't like to lose at all, really. It's hard to be right in the first place, let alone lose on it. Right?
Right.
So the thing blows through to 38, and I'm going, for God's sake, how did I do this again? Well, then the day starts going down. The Fed must have poured a bunch of money in because the bonds start going the other way. They start going up, 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 up. Well, it gets to 41. We take the thing off, make a nice little profit on it. It ends up closing at like 43 or something. It was like a 5-point move in the TLT, which I've never seen before. Now, this morning it's down $2. Now it's back down to 140.90. I mean, what is...
Yeah, I see that.
What is going on?
40.88 bid, 40.99 offer.
Yeah, and now we got gold back up like the $20. It was down 40 or something on Friday. I mean, this is crazy stuff on stuff that doesn't move that much. It's one thing to see, GameStop going up and down, even though that thing was way more than it was. But it's quite another to see bonds start to do this. Wasn't the limit on bonds 3 points?
It was something like that. But I mean, obviously, it screwed the 1%ers.
Yeah. What God. But
I heard something last night that was interesting, and it was on a liberal station, believe it or not, but they were talking about if pump and dump is against the law, why isn't the SEC going after new issues?
Well, that is the truth. Well, I mean, there's a lot of...
Yeah, it's their job to pump and dump. Goldman Sachs is just the best.
Yeah, well, that's... it's all about who you are. I mean, you know what's interesting, and I probably should mention this on the air, not because it... You know what's bizarre for me?
Then don't, Tom.
Well, no, it's, you know what's, what is sneaking into the rules? Actually, this is what my issue is with a lot of the regulators, is what they do is they let people know that the idea that they're forcing enforcement down to other people. I think really, really sucks, to lack of a better term. I mean, so what you're seeing now, Frank, is that they don't like people who trade penny stocks. And God help you, if you were a consultant 10 years ago for some place and you got paid in stock and they gave you a paper certificate and now the thing is listed somewhere, try and bring that stock to a brokerage firm. Nobody will take it. Now, they maybe have their reasons, whatever, but they're essentially saying anybody with paper stock is a crook. But they won't tell you that. You won't see on the top of the Wall Street Journal, FINRA says, or SEC says, if you have paper stock, you might as well use it next time you go to the can because it's worthless. They will never have the stones to do that, yet they'll make it so that no firm will take it, which I think
it's
really, really sucks.
Again, having had a background in done my short stint with enforcement, you want to go after a little guy that's not going to make a stink. You just want to skim your $10,000-$25,000 fines.
Well, but
that'll pay for a lot of auditors or investigators.
But I'm saying you have when you were in the business world, you were in business world like me before you were a trader. There was lots of occasions when people went. Did something for a startup company and they didn't have cash and you got paid in stock. And now people are essentially saying you're a money launderer if you do that. In fact, the rules at some places, IB is really bad on this. The rules are if you want to bring a paper stock into the place, a lot of times now you have to have a $250,000 account that has to have been there for a year. Now, well, where did you become a crook by having paper stock, Frank?
IB has a global presence, so... Of course, it seems like it'd be easier to fake an electronic one than a paper one, but...
What I'm saying, this is now... It's endemic. It's all over.
I don't hold up IB to be any standard.
No, I'm just saying they at least will tell you what the rule is at their place. So that part's...
Well, yeah,
that
they're part's not shy about breaking your heart.
But I'm saying other places... if you trade a lot of low-priced stocks... You're under the watchful eye of their anti-money laundering people. Since when did that become illegal? Why do we let people list low price stocks if we're going to put the bad eye on somebody who trades them?
Well, you don't want low price stocks because Goldman Sachs can't make money unless the stocks are 200 to 1,000.
Well, that's
or whoever the last five people are.
Well, my message to the crazies on the right and to the left. My message always is, it doesn't matter which side you're on, these people keep going along. It's like the bureaucracy in Russia. Neither side does anything to stop any of this stuff.
No, oligarchs run the deal.
Yeah, oligarchs run the deal.
And you, neither you or I are oligarchs.
No, but a lot of people will lose friends and acquaintances over fighting on the politics I think both sides, my one message is, the more you research, the more you realize it doesn't matter how much you argue with somebody and all this stuff. The fact is, as a matter of fact, I had the misfortune, Frank, of listening to Fox the other night for like 5 minutes, because once I turned it on, of course I got interested. And it had to do with the grid in Texas. And I have been on a record here from talking to my engineering buddies and stuff, was you need to find out several things. How was the storm such that it overloaded the design capability of the system? And the answer to that is probably yes, but I don't know. But somebody has to figure that out. In other words, if the system was built as designed, was that storm too overwhelming? And I'm going to say there's at least a 50-50 chance that that's the answer to that is yes.
But 10 years ago, they said to modify it, but there was no teeth in the law. Or the recommendation.
Okay, right. Let me finish here for a sec.
Okay.
The second is, was it built to the design specs? Did somebody cheat? Maybe, maybe not. Okay, was the maintenance, was the design, nothing's ever design spec, Frank. But if design spec is 100, the day before this happened, would all the maintenance deferred maintenance, no maintenance. What was the thing? What was it in terms of design spec? Was it 60% of design spec, 70, 80? Did somebody get paid to redo a whole section and didn't friggin' do it, which like it would be in Chicago? Was the thing allowed to degrade like Commonwealth Edison? I don't know. But what I know is before I can determine who's wrong, I need to know all this stuff. Yet everybody's got an opinion right now and has an answer, even though nobody has done any of those studies that I know of. Am I correct or not? Does anybody have
You're correct.
So I turn on Fox. Well, Fox was on when I went to turn on the Hawk game. And they got some buffoon on there talking about, well, you know, the only reason why this happened is because, now Texas, of course, is pretty much a red state, although they're having some issues with some of the districts because they have Hispanics and so forth there that are voting the wrong way. But for Texicans anyway. So the story was the environmentalist made us put some, windmills and stuff into the system, and everybody knows that's what screwed up the system. So it's not our blue blood Republicans in Texas. It's what the environmentalists made us do that screwed up our system. I'm sitting listening to this drivel going, what is this guy talking about? And then the announcer starts piling in about how if Trump would not have gone down there for 2 weeks, how the press, now these guys are on national TV, the press, it's all, I love always being this idea of being the underdog press, you know. The press would be all over Trump for not being there. How does anybody know what would have happened if some other guy would have won and wouldn't have been there? I mean, talk about a straw horse, Frank. But you can get into this.
Couldn't play golf for 2 weeks.
Well, but okay, but I'm saying, but the point being is, how do you start up a diatribe from two people that have no idea what the hell they're talking about, and yet it almost becomes compelling. Wait a minute, did the liberals make these guys do something? They made them change their sacred system? Everything was perfect except for what the liberals made? I mean, how does anybody even believe that, Frank?
All I know is when I had a son go to school up in northern Wisconsin, and along Lake Winnebago, there's windmill farms. And you know what? Around Green Bay and the Fox Valley region, those windmills go year-round. They don't shut down because it's 20 degrees.
Not if it's windy. They shut down if there's no wind.
Or they shut down if there's too much wind.
That's true. All right, Frank, we got a dash, bud. Talk to you on Thursday. Have a good one. SP Futures up 37. NASDAQ Futures up 147. Be right back. Mr. Joel and Cannon.
John Flanagan.
Oh, that's right, Joel. This isn't Tuesday, man. It's only Monday.
How much confidence do you have that your investments will make you wealthy? Do you truly know the odds? Welcome to Luckbox, the control freak's guide to life, money, and probability. Luckbox shows you how to gauge the likelihood of success before you commit to an investment or any other decision. And Luckbox is free for 1 year at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Each new issue dives deep into the current investing climate, separates the signal from the noise with relevant trade ideas, and equips you with cutting-edge tactics you don't already know. Luckbox is the essential magazine for proactive investors who are hell-bent on pursuing life, luxury, and happiness through sports, fitness, travel, food, spirits, music, and a whole lot more. Smart investors don't bet on possibilities, they play the probabilities. Luckbox is $7.99 on newsstands, but you can subscribe for 10 free digital issues at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Don't rely on luck. Get Luckbox at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks.
Hello, this is Tom Harrell, the Chief. Confused about investing these days? I suspect you are not alone. Investing was never easy, although at times it may have seemed so. I think one reason behind the current concern, although maybe not explained as such, is how the fluctuation in the American dollar and the associated politics is affecting your investments and your wealth. It may not be enough to make some money in your investments. You may need now to make enough to exceed the amount that your leadership is depreciating the value of the dollars you've worked your whole life to accumulate. That same leadership has seen fit to maneuver risk-free interest rates to near zero. Providing positive risk-averse returns in a zero-interest and declining real wealth environment is by far the toughest assignment I've ever had in my years as a money manager. I'm sure that a lot of you have heard that one way to possibly deal with this problem is to invest in so-called hard currencies like silver and gold, the idea being that they will retain their relative value in the face of devaluation of paper currencies like the dollar. To be honest, I have never been a gold bug. I've always had faith that having enough dollars and a good investment strategy was good enough. Now I'm not so sure. But I do know that if I did invest in gold or silver, I'd want to do it in the same manner as we do with PTI for investments in the market, with defined risk. If you feel the need to invest in gold or silver, we can do it using the same strategies that we use for our protected index program. No matter what you invest in, we feel that you need to know and control your risk. Find us at PTISecurities.com. That's PTISecurities.com.
Are you one of the millions of people who suffer with pain? Do you wake up in the morning with stiffness in the lower back or neck? Why are you using medication to cover up the symptoms without treating the actual cause? Painkillers, muscle relaxants, and anti-inflammatories are not the answer. At ChiroMed, physicians are trained to detect the cause of your symptoms and to correct the underlying problem. If you're ready to listen to common sense and do what it takes to make changes in your body that can affect your health for the rest of your life, give ChiroMed a call and set up a complimentary consultation. They are located in Orland Park and can be reached at 708-403-2727. 20,000 patients over 22 years have been treated at ChiroMed, and over 90% of them have had positive results without medication or expensive surgery. Isn't it time you did something good for your body too? Give ChiroMed a call. 708-403-2727. That's 708-403-2727. Let's get you pain-free and living again.
Stocks, jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here, right now, right here, right now, right now.
Hello and welcome back to Stocks and Jacks. I'm Tom Ollies, Mr. Brett Weber on the board. S&P futures, I've got... We have to do traffic, weather, and sports here, maybe after a bit. S&P futures up 36.75, and the NASDAQ futures up 147. Individual stocks, well, every single stock in the Dow 30 is up. I guess that's good. We've got the spiders up 394, but the big movers are Apple up $2. Apple's been getting whacked, but it's up today. A Boeing up 449. We got Caterpillar up 262. These things, Friday was a very interesting day in the sense that all the stocks had been kind of carrying us along. I mean, the 3Ms, the Caterpillars, and those were all getting hit pretty heavy. And the stocks that were up in the Dow were the ones that have been getting clobbered, which has been Apple and Microsoft. So it was a big kind of reversal day for all that on Friday. Hey, how about doing traffic, weather, sports while I get my machine up here, which seems a little balky.
Sure, I can do that. We're at 36 minutes past the hour. Good morning to everyone out there. We have a few issues in the area already this morning on a Monday morning, especially involving the Kennedy Expressway. On the outbound side, just before Fullerton, there's a crash blocking the two left lanes, and this is causing significant congestion to begin to build on the outbound Kennedy heading toward O'Hare. Downtown to Montrose is up to 19 minutes and growing. To O'Hare, you're approaching 30 minutes right now, but expect delays on the outbound Kennedy due to that crash. There's also an exit ramp closed on the outbound Kennedy at Montrose, and that's probably contributing to the delays as well. No significant issues on the inbound side, though traffic is starting to build, but it's the outbound side that's the slow spot right now. Edens Expressway looking okay. No issues on the Eisenhower. Stevenson all quiet. Southside Expressways are looking good this morning. Off the expressways, this is down in your neck of the woods, Chief, Orland Park. 143rd Street between Creek Crossing Drive and Wolf Road is closed due to icy conditions. I assume that's some flooding type issue.
I know right where that is.
And then out in the western suburbs.
Creek Crossing Road. What the hell is that?
I don't know. US 30, which is a Lincoln Highway. Between Hill Avenue and Lincoln Station Drive, there is a crash there that has that area closed. That's pretty far out west. And then in Naperville, Butterfield Road at Winfield Road, there's a crash. And then just northeast of there, North Avenue at Roaring Road, there is a crash. But everything else is quiet out there. Weather today, lots of sunshine, but much colder today than it has been the last few days. And then we warm back up into the 40s again tomorrow. But today, it's going to be partly cloudy and a high of just 32 with wind chills in the low 20s. Right now, it's clear and 27 degrees downtown. For our Phoenix listeners, sunshine with a high of 72 today. Right now, it's clear and 40. In sports, the Bulls were off last night. They return to action tonight, hosting the Denver Nuggets at the United Center. That's a 7 p.m.
Wasn't there a game canceled last night, or was that the Hawks?
It was postponed against Toronto, but they've constantly been.
Toronto is in Florida.
Exactly. But the Bulls are back in action tonight as Denver comes to town. That's a 7 p.m. Tip. Suns beat the T-Wolves 118-99. In hockey, the Blackhawks blew out the Red Wings 7-2. So that was a big win there. Chief.
We have the DAX up 110.8%, FTSE up 87, 1.3. kicking around up 71.2. We're talking about Asia here, but don't careful with this because these guys, Nikkei was down 1,200 points on Friday, so it's up 697 today. It was down 4% on Friday. It's back up 241. So I guess that's almost an exact Fibonacci replacement, 0.66, right? Shanghai up 42, 1.2. Hang Seng up 472, 1.6. They were down 1,000 on Friday as well. So we've got almost Fibonacci replacements over there. We're not sure why the two-thirds is such a big Fibonacci number, but it is. Bonds 1.44. That's minus one basis point. Bund minus 0.30. Got down to minus 0.29. Got up to minus 0.29. Japan 0.16, which is still way better than it has been for like a decade. Oil up 60 cents, 62.10. Brent up 63 cents, 65.05. Natural gas up a penny, 2.78, but down what, 40 cents from its high, Manny. So if you'd have bought natural gas, it got under $2, rode it to 3.20 and sold it, you've had a very good year, and it's only February.
Sounds good.
Yeah, actually, it's March 1st. RBOB up a penny, 1.96. By the way, those who deny inflation, I hunted and pecked, Manny. I found 2.75. 2 weeks ago it was 2.37. I was getting gas in the Suburban, maybe 3 weeks ago. So it's up about 40 cents in 2 to 3 weeks. I don't know if you've noticed. It's $4 downtown, right?
Not quite. It's about
$3.99 by our knucklehead at North Avenue.
The North Avenue guy is like, yeah, $3.79 or something like that. But if the regular stations are like, I don't know.
Well, you're not one who's taken in by bucks. You're not one taken in by that number he has up there, are you? $3.79 is with the car wash.
Yeah, I would never. I've never gone to that gas station ever.
I admit that I've been there once and I've gotten. I'm like lumpy and leave it to Beaver. I get like 5 hours worth of the finest just to make it to Orland. What would my Lumpy used to get, John? Give me a quarter's worth of the finest? What was Lumpy's name, Eddie?
I have no idea.
Clarence Rutherford III?
Okay.
Lumpy? His old man hated it when they called him Lumpy. That's Clarence. No, it's Lumpy. Gold up $12, 17.40. Silver up 49 cents, 26.93. Copper up 6 cents, 4.15. And Jan's. Oh, we got to do crypto. Yeah, I got to do crypto. Up 3,047.691. The top was what, 56, Manny, in the Bitcoin.
Yeah, I think it's either 56 or 57.
The Jan, I wish we had met at some place where we could have had a lot more fun than Notre Dame and. I didn't learn near as much because, I tell you what, if you have any kind of memory and you look at what's going on in the world right now and you try and piece things together, it gets amazingly disgusting and very tedious. We've been doing the show during the pandemic or whatever you want to call it for a year. And in fact, we're pushing up on the date when, the saloons closed, the day the music died, and what, February 16th?
I know.
Yeah, and
black day was.
It was a black day. Not being able to go out and have a beer on St. Patrick's Day, I don't think I'm never going to get over it, to be honest with you. It was like the day I didn't make the choir in fourth grade. I've just never gotten over it. the interesting part, Jan, is we've had mostly from the right, I'll say, our more conservative people. Not that, you know, I'm just saying where it came from, is for a year now, we've been given test to everybody. This guy's positive, this lady's positive, blah, blah, blah. These are the numbers. Without any regard to whether the person was sick or not, right? But with the idea being you can still pass it. I understand. I get it. I understand why you did that. But now we have our vaccines being tested with massive amounts of government money behind it. And the only thing they're reporting on are people that are actually sick, not people that test positive at all. I'm not saying one's right and the other's wrong. I'm just saying, how is it that the same people, depending on who the players are, tout one in one area and tout one in the other? It is amazingly hypocritical. It's amazingly inconsistent. Or am I wrong?
No, I agree completely.
You're not supposed to agree.
It's pointless stampeding to get something that is not being tracked in a way that would make it, I think, you know, a lot more attractive to people. If they really thought that this vaccine had this kind of retest rate with the people who had already taken it, and we knew pretty much where we stood in terms of your likely, you know, exposure for reinfection and so on. We don't know any of these things. We don't seem to be interested in trying to get numbers to help us out. So it isn't brand new either, but, you know, for all the years we've had a so-called flu vaccine, was there ever any attempt to determine how many people who got it and presented symptoms later on actually had something that the vaccine was supposedly supposed to inoculate against you against. I don't think we ever knew or cared about that either. So it isn't like all of a sudden we've kind of dropped the ball. I don't think we ever had a handle on the stuff we were inoculating people for. We didn't really take the next step to determine how good this was or whether we can make it better or where we blew it this year and where we can do better next year. There's never been any kind of attention paid to that.
I think you're rolling us into a different subject, which we might as well go there.
Yeah.
I think you're rolling us into a subject where I think people did know, and for some reason, either it didn't sell or didn't find a spot in a newspaper or whatever. I think people did know. I think in one of the things that's been revealing to me is I get all this stuff from a lot of it from listeners, and thank you very much. Virtually every serious study that I've seen on this, when I say a serious study, something where you pick a topic, you research it, there's graphs, there's numbers, there's something you can actually, that I can actually read and make my own, you know, type of thing, inevitably comes from overseas, Jen. Now, I refuse to believe that our people aren't doing the same thing. I'll bet if you knew where to look someplace, or if we had, you know, any kind of a medical researcher in here, he would say that every single year, somebody somewhere is keeping track of which one of the, if it's N1, B1, whatever flus are in the shot versus the flus that show up and how many people got helped. I'll bet that knowledge is someplace. And yet somewhere, somebody either doesn't think it sells, since we have less and less, even though there's more and more alleged news, there's less and less people producing it. Maybe somebody will say, nobody will pay for that in the Tribune, it doesn't deserve an article on page 6. I don't know, I would find it interesting, but you know, I think you would too. But I mean, I think that information is somewhere. I mean, I think if you talk to your doctor, he would say, I gave, you know, X number of people the flu shot, and we must have hit it on the head because I didn't get any of them back here. Or, I don't know why I gave the shots, everybody's here with the flu, it's a different one than was in the shot. I mean, I have a feeling that information is someplace. It's just, somebody's determining that we can't handle the truth, and they'd rather keep us fighting right versus left or something. I really think that stuff's out there. And if you put stuff out there truthfully, I don't know if we're not ready for it, we don't care about it, people don't think we're ready for it, something's weird. I mean, clearly the difference between the hype on this thing for a whole year, in that if somebody tests positive, you're considering them definitely ill, even though they aren't sick. I guess that's a way you want to go with something as contagious as this, but then you don't go exactly the opposite way when you're talking about the vaccine. You can't do both. You do one or the other, I think. Yeah, we're doing both. One if you're Johnson
right.
Johnson,
right.
And one if you're some school and you can't open. Oh no, that kid tested positive. Yeah, but he's not even sick. That doesn't matter. But now we don't,
well, and the fact that at the same time you've got flu numbers that have just vanished completely. And, I mean, if there were ever any kind of a clinical way of identifying particular flu cases, and I think there always have been, and again, this is part of the problem that we don't know more than we do, or we don't have easy access to the information. But now there are no flu cases, really, you know, like single-digit cases in some states. And how could that be? Unless they've just changed the diagnosis from one thing to another.
Well,
the reason flu would have been eradicated by coronavirus, but it seems to have just been, it's not tabulated, it's not considered a threat at all this year, and to me it just makes it a very compelling case to the average person. What we used to call flu, we now call COVID, and we get hysterical about it, and why should I get a vaccine over something that has so little impact on my health or ability to work or get out of bed in the morning and to survive ultimately? Why would you do that unless you had something far more compelling than the data that we have? So I think the whole thing is become sort of a scam in my book, and I'm pretty sick of it. And I can't even get too excited about the vaccine conversation because I think we're fighting the wrong thing here. We're fighting, you know, a response to a disease in the economic frame that has nothing to do with the medical discussion whatsoever anymore.
So I'm going to lob one at you though, John. I'm
totally turned off. Yeah.
I have no research on this, but I will. I know how they do the regular flu stuff. Okay, the regular flu stuff is you scour the southern hemisphere during their winter. You figure out what strains are working down there, and those are the ones that you put in the flu shot up here, right? And when the flu comes right. this way, you hope you're ready for it with the antibodies, just like they're doing the COVID. From what I understand, from what people have told me and the stuff I've read and a couple doctors, there are no COVID flus. There's a few COVID colds. But a COVID infection, a COVID virus, is not a flu. They're different. But a COVID cold, there are like three or four. There's like 30 different colds. There's three or four of them are COVID colds, whatever. Again, this is what some of the stuff I've read. My point is that I don't think the people from the Southern Hemisphere were able to travel north. And I think, I would guess, at the end of the day, that's one of the reasons why we don't have a flu season. I don't think it was able to get here.
Well, the numbers in Australia cratered during their peak winter season.
Really? Okay, I did not know that.
They were tabulating them there either. Now, I'm not saying there wasn't any flu. Maybe what we're seeing today, in calling it by another name, is what we've always had, and we don't get hysterical about. But the numbers were treated the same way in Australia as they're being treated in the Northern Hemisphere, and flu has effectively been eradicated, which should be a great cause for celebration.
Flu does transfer from person to person in subway cars, and it works. Nobody's worried. I mean, it's the same distancing that would supposedly work for COVID would work for the flu as well, right?
I mean, but we never had mask orders, and we never had lockdowns. We didn't have school closures during heavy.
Well, I'll tell you what, down here downtown, if I didn't sneak to the bar downstairs once in a while, how could I get the flu? I'm not within 10 feet of anybody. There's 10 people in our building. Where am I going to get it from? Right?
Well, yeah, and God knows where you got the flu from in all those years, too.
Well, I tell you where I got it. When it was 350 people yelling in everybody's face in the OEX pit, I think I probably got it there. God bless. I'd have to go wash my face and the other people's saliva off it at the end of the day. It was that bad. I mean, remember times people yelled
safety
right?
Safety in numbers. Yeah. Everybody giving it.
Well, I mean, there were guys that were my age then that would pick a week when everybody's hacking away down there and coughing, and they wouldn't trade that week. Because they said, wait a minute, I'm not 30 like the rest of these guys are 35. But there were times when, I mean, it got to the point where, you know, you almost, after a few years, you had everything. You didn't get sick anymore. I mean, talk about a petri dish. The only good news is that in the new floor, they actually had the ventilation in the floor, and they sucked it up through the ceiling. So it actually was about as well ventilated as anything like that could be. But still, I mean, there were days, Jan, when you had to put your arms up where you could write on your card. You couldn't put them down. That's how close you were to people. So, I mean, if there's a germ, it was there. I'm really stunned that out of all those years, we never had like a, what's the disease that Monty had? Something serious, you know, like a mono.
Oh, the meningitis?
Meningitis or a mono or something. It's, that would be like being in a New York subway car all day long. I mean, because the subway cars were like that in New York. I mean, I think to a certain extent, you know, not the COVID something new, but you get immune to it. Audrey's dad, I think he passed when he was 97, 98, something like that. And he was, you know, lucid to the end. And so Audrey would tell him, Dad, we should be going out to lunch, but there's a cold around or a flu. And he goes, used to call her Angel. Angel, I was on all the boats going over to World War II. I guess I had everything. If it's out there, I had it. And he'd say, I'm not staying in no matter what. And now something COVID is new, you'd probably have to do that. But she says, you know, The old dude was right. So for his last 12 years of his life, he never had a cold or the flu. Again, he probably had every one of them.
The herd immunity, and you live long enough and stay healthy enough in other areas, and you do develop a resistance to things that other people with other health concerns can't fight off. So yeah, I think the long-lived people who saw all these bugs all their lives and were overseas and fought in war.
Oh yeah.
You know, all these horrible encounters that people had, the strong ones survived. If you had other compromising things, of course, it was a different story. But that really is the same thing with COVID, and it was always the case with flu, too. If you had other conditions, flu could be a lot more serious and often fatal. But the fact we don't even have numbers anymore makes me kind of sick to think that we're all now worried about something else we've slapped a new name on and are doubly terrified over. And I think we're kind of asking people to make an imaginative leap here that is pretty nuts.
Well, I know when, last year was interesting, is that we started the year out. This is in the fall of 2019. We actually started out with a pretty nasty flu year. And it actually dissipated fairly early for some reason, because lady in our office here, she's a few days a week anyway, she got the COVID relatively early. You know, so it was like maybe May-ish, and her husband works for the park district, and of course everybody there had it and brought it all home. So she called her doctor and said, I got this flu, or I got this, whatever this thing is, fever, but it's under, he goes, if it's not over 100, don't come in. We don't want you giving it to anybody else. He goes, you've got the COVID. And she goes, how do you know it's not the flu? He goes, that's what we do all day. We trace all this stuff. I mean, I think people are actually doing this, Jen. He goes, there is no active flu in the Chicago area right now. This is like last May. Because if you got those symptoms, you got the COVID. So there are people, I don't think they ever make it to radio, TV, or print, that actually know what's going on. And why we manage to keep them shut up, I don't know. But he goes, he told her, there is no active flu. If you've got flu-like symptoms, they're to COVID. Now, I'll bet...
Doesn't that just, from a common-sense standpoint, tell you that we've just been sold a bill of goods about flu, then?
Well, they know what it's
there. Was there ever any flu? I think there was. And, you know, there certainly were convincing numbers that there was something going around, and it was seasonal, and there were peak years and low years. How could it vanish?
They know every year from taking tests on people. I mean, Frank, the gentleman who was just down before us, he and his wife, and this is a weird thing. This went through the South Side last February before the COVID. Audrey had it. My chiropractor said everybody in the office had it. All their patients had it. It was a nasty flu-like disease. It lasted like 2 weeks. And everybody, you know, they keep your blood now for sometimes. So Frank and his wife, they both had it, and they went back to the doctor. I'm not giving you Frank's medical records or anything, but the guy said, I retested your blood. You did not have the COVID. You did not have the flu from last season. Some unknown virus went through that whole area. Now, I'm sure it wasn't just that area. My chiropractor was telling me that they still know what it was. It wasn't the flu and it wasn't COVID. But not one of those people in his survey tested positive for COVID. So whatever it was, seems to have made those people somewhat immune to the COVID, at least for a little while. Even though nobody knows, it's on everybody's report as an unknown virus. Now, someplace, somewhere, I don't know where the COVID came forward, whether somebody's actually, you know, taking those samples and trying to figure out what it was. I, you know, people probably doing this stuff. I just don't think this knowledge makes it through here. I don't know why, John. I mean, there appears to be some kind of filter on real news, and I can't put my hand on it, my finger on it. But, I mean, Maddie's probably right that there's not as many people actually writing articles than there used to be, even though everybody says your access to news is greater and faster than it's ever been. I mean, there's no doubt about that. But the news itself, I mean, are there as many reporters writing articles? Is there investigative reporting going on? You know, why is the Tribune a third of the size it used to be? There's no city desk. There's no nothing. I mean, you got to wonder where exactly are we? I don't know. I mean, financial reporting, I think, is horrible. I mean, it's very difficult to find out. I mean, what's going on with the you know, with some of the numbers from these companies, especially now the ones that they don't give guidance and you're whipped into a frenzy by a company that doesn't give guidance, and yet the guys that are predicting the profit is a buck, and they committed $1.20. Oh God, it's great. Wait a minute, who the hell predicted it? I mean, how many we don't the firms when I first entered the business, or even before I did, when I was trading a retail account when I was still at Pullman, you could go to any. There were all kinds of retail firms in Chicago. There was Hornblower and Weeks. There was Merrill. There were the big guys, but there were other people. There was, there were hundreds of them. And every one of those places would have guys. There were guys or ladies, mostly guys in those days, unfortunately. I don't know why it was a tough business for women to get in, even on the analyst side. But there'd be people that had their 20 stocks that they followed, and they put out reports every week, every month for people. And that's all they did, was trying to find the I don't know, that research is still being done by a few people, but I don't think anywhere near as many. I mean, so when something like, this GameStop runs up, I don't see an article the next day that says, I mean, maybe you can dig through and get the numbers on the internet, you can do it yourself, but I don't see a number going out there and say, wait a minute. Here's a company that makes XXX. By the way, with the spike in the price yesterday, they just added $7 billion to their market cap, and which makes them as big as these other five companies. Except, by the way, these guys only have 40 stores, and all they're doing is selling games, and they have never made a dime in their life. I mean, you don't see that kind of research article the next day like you used to be able to. Wall Street Journal would have that in there. I don't think people are investigating, or maybe people don't want them writing that stuff about companies. Maybe they're worried about liability. I mean, I don't know. But something has changed in terms of the information. Is it more readily available? Yeah, I don't have to go down the block and buy the Wall Street Journal. It's right there on the internet. But there's nothing there to the extent. So, I mean, I don't know what, I mean, my expert on this is Mr. Weber. I mean, I don't know how you, which comes first here, Matty? I mean, does nobody want to pay for that anymore or what?
That's all it is. It's just a matter of, it flooded onto the internet, you know, 20 years ago or whatever, and for free, and everyone got used to for free, and everyone canceled their newspaper subscriptions and stopped buying newspapers and wouldn't pay for subscription fees online, and they just started laying off, and now people are trying to charge, you know, certain subscription fees for certain things, but once you've gone a period of time without paying for information, then why would you start paying for it all of a sudden? And so, I think it's as simple as that.
Well,
think every newspaper, and not just American newspapers, but you know, the correspondents in every foreign capital, you know, to cover hot spots or just, you know, follow diplomatic, you know, events. And, you know, the Tribune and the Daily News, all these papers had major Washington outlets, correspondents and news bureaus with a whole staff of people. And you got people with different connections in different parties, you know, different levels of government. So you got scoops, you had, you know, watchdog type operations where you couldn't do much in a place like Washington, D.C. 50 years ago without some newspaper with some correspondent there knowing about it and passing the word around. And there was, you know, tremendous interest in having different viewpoints to sort all this stuff out. Now we've got massive penetration of the news, but you have the AP and Reuters, and, you know, they farm it out to every other news organization, and you get the same message multiplied by how many billions of instances, and there's no fresh stuff. There's no new eyes looking at it. There's no, you know, people doing the grunt work to figure out is the story credible or not, follow this lead. There's none of that anymore. And it's not just financial news, it's political news, it's election news, it's international news. I mean, all across the board, we have terrible reporting about stuff. We've got great, you know, blanketing of people with noise and numbers, but it's all the same stuff. It's completely redundant all the time.
It reminds me of
very little investigation.
It reminds me of our Latin homework at Marist, where like one guy to actually translate it, and everybody else would get it by the time it got to the last guy.
Oh.
You could sort of tell that there was only one guy to translate, but everybody changed all the words to. It wasn't even the same story. But
you have a telephone too. Some of those translations got pretty mangled with the process.
S&P futures up 38. NASDAQ futures up 144. Be right back, Stocks and Jocks.
Is your business being challenged by the complexities surrounding healthcare reform or other matters related to human resources management? If so, then Cognos HR can help. A longtime friend and contributor to the Stocks and Jocks radio program, Cognos HR provides its clients with a perfect blend of strategic consulting and day-to-day HR management to drive overall improvement in business performance. Companies that join the Cognos HR family are better able to manage healthcare costs, enhance benefit offerings, and improve employee satisfaction by leveraging our access to Fortune 500 benefits. Our innovative onboarding and payroll technology, along with our constant attention to detail, enables us to provide the highest level of quality service to our clients. Now, your time and energy can be focused on generating business and increasing your bottom line. We'll take care of the rest. For more information, call us at 630-401-8810 or search us on the web at CognosHR.com. Cognos HR, innovation in human resources. Licensed in Illinois and Arizona.
Interested in promoting your business to a high-end audience comprised of entrepreneurs, traders, executives, and the everyday business person? Consider advertising on Stocks and Jocks. With a devout listenership covering the Chicago market, along with a vast online presence, advertising on Stocks and Jocks may be just what it takes to put your business over the top. For more information, contact me, Matt Weber, at matt@stocksandjocks.net. That's matt@stocksandjocks.net.
Hi, I'm Audrey Johnson, an owner of Home Source Realty and a frequent contributor to Stocks and Jocks. Do you know when the unofficial start of real estate season is in the Chicago area? It's actually right after the Super Bowl. Yep, it's the time when the guys will finally get off the couch and the families start looking for homes in the area. Now, interest rates also have been hovering around 4%, and the selection of properties are great. And if you're a first-time home buyer, there is an Illinois program that allows you to purchase a home for only 1% down. And that also applies to anyone who hasn't owned a home in the past 3 years. So if you're thinking about it, this is the perfect time. Call or email me, and I will send you a free list of homes designed to your specifications in your area. My phone number is 708-349-3456, or you can email me, AudreyJohnson@Realtor.com. That's AudreyJohnson@Realtor.com.
Hear ye, hear ye! The Homer Broadcasting System is on the air!
Stocks, jocks,
stocks and jocks,
stocks and jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here, right now. Right
here, right now, right now. There's something happening here.
Well, and welcome back to Stocks and Jocks. Time out, just met Weber on the board. We have some John Flanagan with us. SP Futures now 42. As the futures up 163, we're putting the whip to it. John, the Latin homework comment made me think about something. The guy who used to do the Latin homework all the time was some guy, nice guy. He was, he had a curvature to spine, which I have a little bit of, but he had a little bit more. So they had, he had to wear one of those external braces, your head in the thing all the time. You remember kids wearing, have to wear
oh,
that?
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Well, he was one of these guys. Maddie, he was kind of like Thomas in the sense where if the teacher said, well, if there's no more questions, he'd immediately raise his hand, you know, so he'd have to stay there another 2 minutes.
Yeah.
Well, the guy who sat behind him would take his foot and he'd shove it, you know, underneath the guy's, you know, in the chair where he'd catch the bottom of the brace. The guy would like slide right out as soon as he raised his hand. The guy'd be like slipping down onto the floor. It wasn't politically correct, but it was a lesson learned.
No. I'm ashamed of myself for laughing, Tom.
Oh, I am too. But he never got hurt. But what a great response to the guy's hand going up at 1 minute to three. None of this stuff is new, Manny. There's always somebody who has to say one more question. You're like, what are you doing? Let's get out of here. Anyway, somehow we managed to learn. I don't know how the hell we managed to do that, but yeah. But John, May and I were talking on the way in about the you know, the vitriol that's flying from left to right, and I was dealing with some of that this weekend. But I don't understand why we were being duped into this arguing amongst ourselves while we're getting picked clean by a lot of these places. And anybody who thinks that this changes through the administration, that the real significant stuff is the same under both, I just wish people would hear some of that. I mean, more, and they don't want to. I mean, it's not the differences between the left and the right. It's the people that have no difference between the left and the right. They're just picking them both clean. And I don't know how I can. I mean, I try, and I think some of the people on the show try. You know, but we're not national TV. I don't think anybody would want to listen to us because nobody's saying this is not the issue. The issue is this company knowing everything about everybody, and they don't care who's president as long as they bend over for them, right? I mean, somewhere when are people going to get this message through? I mean, when are we going to stop this $1.9 trillion bill that's coming through? When are we going to stop arguing about the guy who shouldn't get the $1,400 and worry about the guy who's getting the $20 billion to keep, so the president of an airline can keep getting paid when the airline's on the ground? I mean, is there any way we can elevate ourselves mentally to look at where the big stealing is instead of the little stuff?
I wish there were. The whole climate, I agree with everything you're saying about how we're really distracted from the stuff we should be screaming and yelling about. But people are so, you know, easily duped into fighting among themselves and taking cues from whatever corner of the media they happen to be listening to, and it's this blame game across the political divide that is a great way of keeping people angry and upset about the wrong things, or the unimportant things, or the things you can't do anything about, and you, so there's no point wasting any energy about them, while at the same time, the stuff that you should be informed about and have every reason to be upset about aren't even on the radar anywhere, and it's, you're just blocked from even having a chance to think about them for any couple consecutive minutes. And in the meantime, we're fighting about the things that we can't change, like our race and our gender and our wherever we fit on whatever spectrum, but we're being thrown into this cauldron all the time, and somebody's stirring the pot, and we're blaming people on the other side of this question for things that they can't change, or nor can we. Why are we wasting all this energy? People are, you know, I think smarter than that most of the time, but they don't get much chance to get, you know, a break from it, and the media stokes it, and everybody thinks that this is where the debate should be taking place, and it has nothing to do with reality, nothing to do with the stuff of any significance, but boy, does it use up all the oxygen in the room.
Well, with the episode with the GameStop and all these other places, the payment for order flow, and everybody getting their face on TV yet again, the senators and Republicans, I mean, the grand experiment, in my mind, of having three people control the whole business and having people be able to trade within the normal spread that you and I can trade in, and having everything being preferenced and paid for, and virtually almost every trade really being traded twice, or maybe not everyone, but close. I think the grand experiment of the last 10 years has been a total failure, John. That we're way better off having specific times of the day that people can trade, whether it's 12 hours, 11, 10, having exchanges, having a customer order book, having as many people making markets as we can. Obviously, now it would be electronic. You wouldn't be standing there. Although, in the option case, they have a place where you can go with spread orders and complicated orders. I don't see why that's not a central spot. You know, you're doing is, I mean, even if everybody else that wants to be communicated with can be, why there can't be a central spot, I don't know. But I mean, the grand experiment, is it working? And I'm saying the answer is no. Why does GameStop have to trade at 4 in the morning when nobody's trading? I mean, the poor guy who has to buy some there, what happens to that market order of buy me 5,000 shares because I'm short? I mean, who gets on the other side of it? How far do they get to move it? When do they get to see it? I mean, this stuff, it literally is a black hole. Where during the day, it's not a black hole. You see what the bid is, where the offer is. You see if something's offered above the... I mean, this grand experiment is to me, an absolute and total failure. Okay? Now, why somebody should be able to trade at 0.999 when other people can't? You can't tell me that that's a good idea. Plus, it allows them to stare you right in the face and say, I improve the order. By what, a thousandth of a cent? But, and also, by the way, nobody wants to be in the market at a standing order because they know what's happening. You didn't improve anything. You know, come on, don't lie to me like that, or I might have to dot your I type of thing. I mean, somewhere along the line here, Jen, when are we going to wake up? Never, but if people control it and they tell you the same thing and they, you know, you get a chance to yell at them on TV, I mean, that's good enough. You don't change anything. I mean, a lot of what has gone on in the market in the last 6 months has been the market fabric is awful. Now, that doesn't mean, when I say that, I mean, I'm a guy who manages money for people. And I still think that you can, if you know what you're doing, you can still get people good fills. Sometimes you have to be more narrow in what you trade. It's one of the reasons why I trade the ETFs. I mean, you're going to get very liquid markets and the spiders and the Qs and those kinds of things. And there's probably 20 stocks, 30 stocks that I could do pretty seriously on a day in and day out basis. But other stuff, I mean, I just think that the fabric, but we make these changes and we don't follow up on any of it. It's just like on the vaccines. They gave stuff to these people. Did you figure out how many people tested? No, we didn't check that. Well, why not? You tested it, you did everywhere else. I mean, I just don't get it. To me, is nobody else seeing the discontinuities here, or is it just us? Or nobody cares? Or
I don't know. Where would there be a conversation where you could air these differences in a civil way? And invite people to hear two even-handed sides of an important question and let them make up their own minds about it. This is the sort of stuff I get the impression nobody wants really talked about. And it extends to things like public health these days, where these people making fiat, you know, all over the place, and everybody has to fall in line behind it. And if you challenge it, you're crazy, or you're a conspiracy theorist, or you're, you know, tinfoil hat person. All it really means is that you don't want any kind of dissent, because you know what you're trying to push people up against is wrong from the get-go, and you don't want that possibility even coming up. So you villainize the people who have questions, and as a result, no questions get asked. There's no way of, you know, revisiting something and saying maybe we should have done it this way, or, you know, it can't take place in a kind of civil atmosphere where there's people, experts on both sides, who can go toe-to-toe and listen to each other and be heard by anybody else. So people are just completely shut out of any kind of decision-making based on reasoned discourse, and that's a horrible mess to be in.
Well, Jan, I'm beating up on this a little bit, but I'm absolutely stunned that somebody doesn't write an article someplace at a front page or an editorial. God, we used to have those, remember? An editorial that says, for a solid year, we have defined a COVID case as somebody who tests positive and even an asymptomatic case. And now for purposes of our vaccines, we're not counting asymptomatic cases. To me, John, that is a spectacular change in counting.
Absolutely.
In terms of, I mean, I don't know when I've seen a change quite that dramatic, to be honest with you, on something as important. And nobody, I mean, how does that not get picked up?
And the same thing with, you know, the 500,000 death milestone, you know, was in the news last week. Again, nothing about comorbidities, nothing about how many of these people were in this age group or whatever. It's just a number, and it's supposed to terrify us, and don't ask too many questions about how we got to this number. Just look at the number. And that to me is an insult to people. It's an insult to thinking people anyway, because that number doesn't tell you much of anything other than what, you know, they want you to be appalled by the size of it. What the number actually accounts for and why the number is that big, you can't ask questions about that. If you do, you're just thrown overboard completely. You have no place to talk about this kind of stuff.
Are you? I know you were a professor, but I don't think you ever got it down to curriculums on high schools and grammar schools. But one of the constant themes, and again, since I don't have any kids, of my serious right winger acquaintances, shall I say, is that almost universally, the people that have been home, essentially homeschooling or helping their kids, are appalled by the new curriculum. That history, are they right? I have no way of looking at that, Jan. I mean,
oh yeah, the Common Core stuff that came out in the first years of the Bush administration, Arne Duncan years under Obama. I mean, I think this was a new low in academic standards. It made people, you know, not want to succeed. It made it an embarrassment if you had successful students. You had to really dumb the curriculum down in such a way that you really hurt people's ability to advance their education. You gave them reasons to stay in school. It didn't change the dropout rate. It made education insufferable for people who have any kind of, you know, ambition. And it made it difficult for teachers who wanted to go off the reservation sometimes and try new methods. There was no way to do that with these ridiculous standards. And look what we've reaped now. I could see a complete falling off among the entering class in the community college where I taught between 2003 and 2010. It was marked. I mean, I couldn't believe how reading and writing skills had absolutely plunged. And of course, I have no idea now. I haven't kept up with it, but I could see the way the trend was going, and I'm sure it's more horrific now.
Well, Eric talks all the time about how he teaches creative writing, and Eric's a novelist and brilliant man. By the way, he'll be coming on again soon because he's un-coveting, I think. But he says, I spend more time now teaching the writing part, like punctuation and everything, than I do the creative part. It's like everybody's writing an email or something. Because nobody even knows how to write. But
well, you know, I spent more and more time as a composition teacher on grammar and word processing than I ever got a chance to teach when it came to invention or developing ideas or you know, innovative organization of an essay. These kinds of things always got lost in the shuffle because I had to spend so much time on making sure you didn't hand in an essay full of sentence fragments or with comma splices, or the things that didn't hang together with just incoherent writing, let alone how to present it on a word processor. You would think this would make somebody's job easier as a writer, but I spent most of my time, in any given assignment with the monitor up on the screen, and I was at the teacher station, and I was showing you how to format paragraphs, how to change spacing in MS Word. And, that isn't, I don't think, the highest and best use of any English teacher's time. There should be courses in that, and a lot of it is self-taught if you want to spend enough time at it. But in the meantime, I thought, did you really learn how to write an essay this semester? I don't know. You came in at such a level that I gave you, I hope, a leg up in some areas, but I certainly didn't give you all I expected to and all I hoped to and all I thought you needed. So maybe I failed in some terrible ways.
Well, you can't.
Anxious about being a teacher.
It's hard to teach fifth grade if you got to go over fourth grade first.
Yeah, or third grade.
Or third grade.
Absolutely.
Well, I mean, I know when I used to write a lot, but when I was a voracious reader, even in like third or fourth grade, sports books and those kind of, your fallback position would always be read what you wrote, but you'd read so much that you could tell if it sounded good or not just by reading it, right? I mean, almost, even without having, sitting there diagramming Mrs. Prendergast, I still remember her in fourth grade making you diagram sentences. God, I hated that. But, you know what Eric tells me when he proofreads a book? He reads it out loud. He said, if you read it out loud, if there's any glitch in there, it really shows up more than just reading it with your eyes.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
I don't think I've ever done that.
Well, what I used to tell people to do, read it backwards.
Yeah, well,
then you have to look at every word, and you'd catch spelling errors that the spell check didn't catch for you, and you all of a sudden look at a punctuation mark. What's that doing there? If you read it backwards, it destroyed your ability to kind of fill in gaps or miss things that you thought were there that really weren't there, but you'd really notice, oh, my God, wait a minute, how did I get from that word to that word? So it made you a much more careful editor. It was maddening to do it for very long, but it was better than just kind of
pulling yourself. In terms of the economics of all this and the year and the education, I know it's every place is sort of different, but what is the plan here? I mean, I got to believe that there's some kids that are fairly up to date, kids that have the computer capability, that have a teacher who kept at it. I mean, my nephew married this terrific lady, and she's a math teacher, I think, in Berwyn or someplace out west. And she was telling me that if you actually put your heart and soul into it, teaching kids online is way more difficult than being there. She goes, I can't wait to be back in class. It's a lot easier. But a lot of people have kind of shirked. And a lot of people, a lot of the kids aren't there. But if you have a class that there's the 25 kids that actually are online, and you're on them, he goes, it's way more difficult than having them in class, which I guess I would believe. Never been a teacher, but anyway, she was. But you can look at some of the CPS. I used to read these numbers, and I haven't seen them lately, Janet. There's 5,000, 6,000, 10,000 kids they haven't even connected with since last April, to when they closed the schools. They don't know where they're at. I can't imagine a family in any kind of a, could be any color neighborhood, doesn't matter. If you got 3 or 4 kids at home and none or one computer, how do all 3 or 4 kids learn from home, even if you wanted to? I mean, I don't know what you do with that.
Right, and this is after giving computers to these students, too.
Well, do you have enough Wi-Fi capacity?
All this support and whatever that the public schools pay for, and these students are still falling through the cracks at an alarming rate.
Well, you didn't give them all cable.
Right.
I mean, now these families are all paying what, $200 a month for cable? They have and Wi-Fi? I don't know about that. I mean, it's. But my point is, are we going to shift now? But these kids, when I say these kids, economically, I'm going to say 3-4 years ago, when I used to talk to these people in the Tripoli Tap, before you couldn't go to the Tripoli Tap for a while, I think the public high schools, maybe what was the number, 16.5, 16.6, they would get, I'm going to say 4 years ago, the day the school opened, the high school would get 16.6 per student, which is a lot of dough. And now I bet it's 17.5 now. So now that kid, freshman year in college, grammar schools are probably a little less, I'm guessing, John, but say it's 15 in grammar school. That eighth grader, there's 15,000 of people's money that follows that kid the first day he shows up at Walter Payton or whatever it is. I mean, Harrison Upper Grade Center that I was at, or the Spry School when I was at. I mean, so now if the kid didn't quote learn anything or not as much as they're supposed to, or they didn't even show up, are we going to do this all over again for them? Is it another 15 grand? Are we going to do some kind of summer school, or are we just going to pass them all up knowing they didn't learn anything? I mean, some kids did. I've been generalizing, which I shouldn't, but I mean, what is the plan? Are we saying the 15 grand is totally pissed away, or 17 grand? Are we just going to, they're now juniors in name only, or that when they learned half what they're supposed to as a sophomore? I mean, what is the plan here, and how do we, A, afford it, and how can we do that to people?
Well, it's already the plan, I think, and I could see this in, you know, the developmental English and math classes where I taught, that every year they were exploding in enrollment. So the people who were coming in out of accredited high schools, you know, with high school credentials and transcripts, were testing into, you know, three levels below college level credit for an English 101 or a math 101 course. They had been so ill prepared, and yet they had gotten credit. You know, they had math courses and English courses on their high school transcripts, and they had gotten passing grades, and in some cases, you know, straight A's. But they couldn't do the work, and it was, you know, social promotion up the wazoo. And the community colleges then became the front line for, well, what do you do with these people? And some of these people would be mired in non-credit classes for English and math for three or four semesters or more, years in some cases.
Just to catch up?
Over and over again, trying to get to the point where they could actually earn college credits. And yet they were high school grads.
And so we're not talking about...
incredibly embarrassing and frustrating for them, but it showed that, you know, they had just been dumped kind of into a hopper, and it then became, you know, the community college's problem with open enrollment, and these people had to be accepted, but you couldn't have them in a class that they were designed to fail in. So you had to craft all these classes to accommodate them and try to make inroads and get some of them up to speed. And, of course, the failure rate continued to be astronomical in some of these classes. You couldn't undo the bad education these kids had gotten for their, you know, most of their elementary school years and high school years. And it was now coming out in the wash, and these people then are just kind of unemployable in certain jobs because they can't get past this barrier that's been there, and the lower grades never addressed it. They didn't see it as a barrier. They just leaped the kids over the barrier and let somebody else worry about it later on. It was a tremendous injustice. It's an insult to these kids, really.
Well, I can remember back when if somebody wasn't as good in, say, writing or whatever, that they would start a summer class before their college, and usually that's all it took to catch up. You're saying it's way worse than that.
Much worse, much worse. I mean, I would say, just anecdotally, and we agonized about this in English department meetings, but we figured that the students we were getting in English, you know, supposedly ready for English 101, and they were testing in the ACT placement test, the Compass test, that their scores were like what you would see in a fifth or a sixth grader. And yet they were, after they'd had 4 years of high school English, and had gotten passing grades and had a high school diploma to boot. And yet they were writing at about a sixth grade level in many cases.
Well, I don't, this is, when you talk, everything, you know, just about everything comes down to numbers, Jen, unfortunately. This is one of the big, in Chicago, not everywhere else, but in Chicago, it somehow comes down to race. I don't know why it does, but, well, because, I don't know, but, I guess just that's the way it is here, and, where the solution in some of the neighborhoods where kids aren't learning, and I'm saying there's, you know, a lot in the white areas aren't learning either, but as much as maybe some people would, old guys would say they aren't, but the yin and the yang, the fight is between the money I'm talking about, 17 grand a year going to teach somebody, and at the end of the day, it looks to me like they haven't learned a whole hell of a lot. And your solution is, you need more of my money. Right now, it's very selfish on that person's part. But by the same token, if that person has two and three kids in his family and he's sending them all to private schools and he's still paying for everybody else, it's a lot of cash. I mean, there's no, there's no doubt that it's a lot of cash. You're paying twice, right, in our system.
It costs just as much to badly educate somebody as it does to educate them well.
And yet the other side...
Maybe more, just because it's a bigger and more wasteful system that educates people poorly, and it consumes more and more of the money that's you can spread around for education, whether in private schools or through your tax dollars. But the systems have so little quality control, and money, believe me, Tom, is not the answer either.
Well, it is. It seems to be, and everything zeroes down into that, especially if it's your money. I mean, how many debates between the Chicago Public Schools and the rest of the people come down to money, and the people on the other side say, I'm paying through the nose, and what's the product I'm getting? Not only half the kids can't talk or read, neither can half the teachers. Okay, and that's a problem. I mean, but these are, I know it's not nice to say. On the other side says, you're just being selfish. If we only had a lunch program, if we only had this, if we only had that, things would be better. And at some point, if there isn't enough money, they're right. But if there is enough money, then maybe the other side's right. But I don't see either side sitting in a room with a somewhat of a moderator and saying, okay, let's figure out exactly what the problems are, see what the cost ought to be, and let's do it. Well, as long as people don't talk directly like that, John, I don't see a solution. You just get more and more divided and along lines, and if one group happens to be mostly black and the other group it becomes a racial incident when it really isn't or shouldn't be. Is it more of a social incident? Is it the jobs leaving? Whatever it is, there's all kinds of reasons for all this stuff, right? But I don't. If you don't start talking about that, it just seems like we go year after year after year, and nothing ever changes. Except more money, more people leaving the city, more people aren't educated. I mean, we're not gaining at all, I don't think. Or am I wrong? Am I just being cynical?
No, and then, but, you know, the quality of instruction of teachers has pretty much collapsed, I think. And the standards we were talking about a couple minutes ago, and the way you're inculcated these days to be a teacher, it really takes all the imagination and energy out of it for the people who really could be maybe very good teachers, because they're forced to do this kind of rote adoption of boring lesson plans and asking only for the barest minimum of skill development, when if you had any dreams that you could push your students to do more, even if you had that energy and the time to do it, you wouldn't get any institutional support in your school, because you would now be an outlier. You would be somebody pushing the wrong buttons and making everybody else look bad.
I can see you pushing the wrong buttons.
The unions and everybody else wouldn't permit this kind of experimentation. So there's no way to do it if you really have, you know, some kind of gumption within.
Well, John, we're gonna have to take this up again next week. We got to get to Mike Hart and talk about the market a little bit. Thanks, buddy. Maybe this week we can go out. Maybe you can actually leave your house.
Maybe I should. Get some sanity in my life here, Timer.
God. S&P Futures up 36, NASDAQ Futures up 131. Come back, we'll have Mr. Mike Hart. We got a big move in the VIX today. He'll tell us all about it. Get us on the right road trading. There's money to be made here, man. It's just a question of doing it correctly. Buying, you can't yang when you're supposed to be yanging, right? Zig when you should be zagging. We'll be right back. Stocks and Jacks.
How much confidence do you have that your investments will make you wealthy? Do you truly know the odds? Welcome to Luckbox, the control freak's guide to life, money, and probability. Luckbox shows you how to gauge the likelihood of success before you commit to an investment or any other decision. And Luckbox is free for 1 year at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Each new issue dives deep into the current investing climate, separates the signal from the noise with relevant trade ideas, and equips you with cutting-edge tactics you don't already know. Luckbox is the essential magazine for proactive investors who are hell-bent on pursuing life, luxury, and happiness through sports, fitness, travel, food, spirits, music, and a whole lot more. Smart investors don't bet on possibilities, they play the probabilities. Luckbox is $7.99 on newsstands, but you can subscribe for 10 free digital issues at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Don't rely on luck. Get Luckbox at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks.
Are you one of the millions of people who suffer with pain? Do you wake up in the morning with stiffness in the lower back or neck? Why are you using medication to cover up the symptoms without treating the actual cause? Painkillers, muscle relaxants, and anti-inflammatories are not the answer. At ChiroMed, physicians are trained to detect the cause of your symptoms and to correct the underlying problem. If you're ready to listen to common sense and do what it takes to make changes in your body that can affect your health for the rest of your life, Give ChiroMed a call and set up a complimentary consultation. They are located in Orland Park and can be reached at 708-403-2727. 20,000 patients over 22 years have been treated at ChiroMed, and over 90% of them have had positive results without medication or expensive surgery. Isn't it time you did something good for your body too? Give ChiroMed a call. 708-403-2727. That's 708-403-2727. Let's get you pain-free and living again.
Hello, this is Tom Howell, the Chief. We've talked a lot on the show about risk and suitability, about how your portfolio should match your age, income, and risk appetite. It's been hard for investors to maintain that suitability in the last several years due to a Fed strategy that has driven interest rates to virtually zero. You may have even heard that the Fed was trying to drive conservative investors to a riskier portfolio on purpose, for whatever reason. I'm sure you are aware of investors that took some increased risk, such as longer-term fixed income securities, and are now unhappy with that choice. PTI, we've always stressed total portfolio risk awareness and tried to minimize chasing returns in a tough environment. Well, now it looks like maybe interest rates are moving more towards historical levels. Everyone needs to be aware of what that continued movement might do to your portfolio, both good and bad. We also have a stock market that seems to have stalled, at least for the short term. I think it's time for everyone to take a serious look at their goals, their risks, and their portfolios. Do they match? If not, we can help. We have a signature protected index program. We have ways to hedge against interest risk. We can make that portfolio right for you again. Go to PTIsecurities.com or call us right now. The market can change very rapidly. That's PTIsecurities.com.
Stocks, jocks,
stocks and jocks,
stocks and jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here, right now, right here, right now, right now.
Hello and welcome back to Stacks and Jacks. I'm Tom Howell, Mr. Mayor Weber. S&P futures up 37, NASDAQ futures up 133, Dow's up 324. Don't remember the Dow was down 4-something on Friday, as these things are sometimes going different directions these days. Over in Europe, we've got, don't forget, we get these Asia numbers. They were down huge on Friday. DAX up 135, that's a full 1%. FTSE up 87, 1.3%. CAC around up 76, 1.3. Over in Asia, we've got the Nikkei up 697, it's 2.4%. They were down 1,000 on Friday. They were down 4% on Friday. So this is absolutely a Fibonacci. If you're a two-thirds kind of guy, these are all Fibonacci retracements. Shanghai up, we'll see if Mike is a Fibonacci guy. Shanghai's up 42, 1.2%. Hang Seng up 72, 1.3%. Again, these guys are over 1,000 on Friday as well. U.S. on Friday, just as a way of review, Dow was down 469. S&P was down 18, but the NASDAQ was actually up 72. That's what I was talking about. It was a mixed market. Bonds today, 1.45. They're unchanged. The Bund, minus 0.30. Japan, positive 0.16. Oil, we've got oil rallying 43 cents, 61.93. Trying to push back over that 62 number. Ran up 55 cents, 64.97. Natural gas down 2 cents, 274. RBOB is up a penny, 196. I got gas for 275. Which is a solid 40 cents over what it was 2 weeks ago. So I don't know what that means, but it's other than it's higher. Gold up $3, 1732, but still way down from that 1850 where it was not that long ago. Silver up 39 cents, 2683. Copper up 5 cents, 414. Out of the metals, you want to be long copper in the last year, not gold or silver. Thank God for puts, as they say. Cryptocurrencies, we've got the Bitcoin up 3500, 48,054. I think some of this has to do with the House passing the package, another $1.9 trillion into the mix. Whoopee! Maddie, what do you got for us, Trevi Weather Sports?
37 minutes past the hour. Good morning once again to everyone out there. That earlier crash on the outbound Kennedy before Fullerton is all clear, so no resulting congestion from that, so that's good news. Inbound is starting to build, but that's normal for this time of morning. Eisenhower, same thing. Stevenson's still looking good. Southside expressways have been quiet all morning. Only issue on any of the area expressways right now is on I-80. On the westbound side at Oak Park Avenue, there's a disabled vehicle that's causing a slowdown as folks navigate around that. But everything else is all quiet out there. Weather today, much colder than it has been today, but we'll have some sunshine. A high of just 32 with the wind chills in the low 20s, but we'll be back in the mid-40s by tomorrow. So this is just a blip. Today, right now, it's clear and 28 degrees going up to a partly cloudy high of 32. For our Phoenix listeners, sunshine with a high of 72 today. Right now it's clear and 41. In sports, the Blackhawks got revenge after losing to Detroit on Saturday. They blew out the Red Wings yesterday. 7-2 was the final in that one. Coyotes were off. NBA basketball, Bulls were off. They'll host the Denver Nuggets tonight at 7 p.m.
Suns blew out the Timberwolves 118-99. Chief.
So when the opposing goalie, after like the seventh goal comes flying by, takes his stick and bangs it on the top of the thing and breaks it in half, does that mean he's happy with his defenseman or no?
I don't think he's happy with anything. I don't think he's happy with his stick.
It must have been the stick. Mike, how are you, bud?
Hey, doing great. How you doing, Chief?
I'm doing all right. I hear you you bought the TLT at 138 on the bottom on Friday and sold it at 243 the same day, with a move like I've never seen in there, and you're fat and happy today.
That's right. Better be lucky than good. No, actually, I haven't traded TLT in a long time, to be honest with you.
I've been... I could say that I've ridden it down here and made some good money for my people, but which would be very partially true. I've done it, but I've done it in such a cheap manner that we've made money, but we've made about a third of what we should have made. Instead of, I just would have said this thing's going down and jumped on it, but it's hard when you've been early for like 8 years to jump all over it, Mike.
Oh, absolutely. You know, because the same recipe keeps repeating over and over again, and now we're seeing actual movement. It's hard to bet on that for sure.
Well, I mean, for such a long period of time, the Fed was in such control that whenever they'd pour money into the system, even the long-term stuff would go down, the bonds, or the rate would go down because they would buy the bonds and they'd go up. But when you start getting into the verbiage is an inflationary period, you actually, when you start doing that, you start throwing gas on the fire. Because people will say, okay, even more money's coming in, the inflation's... It reaches a point where the Fed's normal actions to keep interest rates lower actually causes them to go higher. And I'm wondering, right. If we're at that tipping point.
Wow. You know, it definitely looks like the market's taking control of sort of this Fed policy this time around. It'd be interesting if we see a continuation, because then I would completely agree with what you're saying, that perhaps this inflation is starting to show cracks, and it's going to, I mean, hypothetically, it should take over the yield curve, and we should start seeing the rates go even higher.
Well, it just becomes, I mean, you look at it, this becomes people think that this is an academic exercise, and it's a theoretical exercise, Mike, but it's not. You and I are in the business. Can I put your dad's money to work at 1.5% for 10 years if I think the inflation is going to be 5? What? I can't do that. That's a horse bleep trade. I can't. I mean,
right.
The return is going to be negative for 10 years for this poor guy, right? I mean, you can't do that. And for a while there was really no fear of that happening, but now I think there is. I mean, I would have been. I mean, I should. I don't want to be a consultant, an insultant, but every firm right now should hire some old fart like me and say, wait a minute, we got a five-year contract coming out. Teach us how to put an escalation clause in it. I can't imagine anybody right now having a fixed five-year contract with anybody. Can you?
No, because the uncertainty is actually so high right now that it's really hard to say, we're going to maintain this low level. You know, the volatility in long-term bonds, bonds, I'm looking at /ZB when I go to bonds, and you can tell that the volatility has creeped up quite a bit. We have an Ivy rank of 26%, which is very high in the bonds, considering this takes a year of volatility into account, and we had extreme volatility within the past year, and that's still a very high number. So bond volatility is creeping up, and that is an indication to me that the market is adding extra risk to bonds.
Okay, so when Mike says ZBs, you're talking about the December 30-year bond contract.
That's right. Yeah.
Okay. Well, okay. I'm not sure a lot of listeners knew that. But that's,
sorry. Yeah. Sometimes I should clarify.
Yeah. But front month, it would be what? It would be,
March.
We're still in March. That's right. We're still in March. So they're in the,
25 days until expiration.
So they're in the ZUM. Wait, what's the March? F?
ZBM1. Yep.
Yeah. The, cause I mean, that's why, That's how the S&Ps became known as the spoos, because when they came out, the first month was the Septembers. So nobody wanted to say right. S&P futures. They were immediately, that would be the SPUs, so they became the spoos. So even when they rolled to December, they were always the spoos, because you weren't going to say the spizzes.
Exactly. Yeah, and that's the thing with bonds. You know, the futures market's set up interestingly because all the contracts don't have regular monthly expirations. They all have expirations monthly, but we like to say the bonds trade on a quarterly basis.
Right.
So we tend to look at just the quarter months all the way to December. So right now, if you just pulled up ZB, your platform might default to June 1st being the next main expiration for bonds.
Well, the you would call them the front month is the one that's trading, okay, and then that'll flip. But then if you're on the floor, if you're a floor guy, though, they refer to it as top step. The top step is the
okay. Yeah, that seems like a reasonable way to call it.
Because the people, when you go to the pit, the one that trades the most, when the broker approaches, the people trading that are on the top step. And then the even like corn is on the boy, where's my bro when I need him? I think corn is on the November cycle. So the other months are kind of, they're like bastard little months, because July is old crop, and
right.
Then November is new crop, right?
That sounds right. It's either that or it's soybeans.
Corn might be December and soybeans November, but because they're different. And the ones in the
middle, I believe it is.
Yeah, so the ones in the middle, like the Septembers or something, would be the stuff from Brazil or someplace. You know, I mean, it would be.
That's right, yeah.
But it's, do you happen to know, I don't want to ask you a question, what the 30-year bond, what's the rate on it, do you know?
Well,
when it's traded?
It's trading for 159.09. But the June cycle is trading 161.13. So the rate is actually higher. It would be higher in the front. I actually, I would have to use a pen and paper to calculate.
Well, I'm going to guess that it's, what is the 30-year rate? 3.2 or something, or 3.5?
It's around there, yeah.
All right, so if it's 3.5, then the bond's got to be like 5.5, the one they're trading.
Right, that's a back-of-the-hand way to kind of do it, yeah, absolutely.
Where I'm going with this, for those that I'm flying by everybody here, the bond that you trade, say the December bond that Mike's talking about, there actually is a bond that is the one that's traded. Now, when it comes to delivery, when I was a Board of Trade member, Mike, they would send you a huge list of bonds where... if you want to deliver this bond instead of the other one, you had to deliver like 1.006 of them or 0.99 something of them. You can deliver all kinds of different bonds, but there's always a different ratio. But back in the, in 1981, when the rates hit their highest, the bond that you traded was an 8.5% bond. Mike, I don't know if you know this now, the bottom tick was like 66.
Wow, okay.
So that would have been what, like 12.5, 13%?
It'd be up there, yeah.
It'll be up there. What do you make of dramatic move Friday, especially in the Asian markets, where they're down like 4%. Now they're all back like 1.75. What is going on? Are we just unglued, Mike, or what are we? I mean, what does that say if you did the VIX and the Japan down 4% Friday and back 2.5 today? What does that do to your VIX? God.
Well, it causes this roller coaster in the VIX. I like how you mentioned the Fibonacci retracement, because I took a quick peek and I pulled up my Fibonacci calculator on my charts, and you are right. It's following that Fibonacci pattern quite well. I'm not a Fibonacci user per se. I really am fascinated with the subject, but my day-to-day trading, I don't rely on Fibonacci just because it's difficult to determine the time frame that you actually want to be looking at the Fibonacci. But if you did it on a day-to-day time frame, this is falling into that Fibonacci retracement. But I don't attribute to Fibonacci. The extreme volatility is, to me, the beginning of maybe much more volatility that's going to be creeping in the system. But as far as the VIX goes here, I don't have the Japanese VIX up because I actually don't know what the ticker is for Japanese VIX. But the U.S. VIX is trading at around 25 this morning, down three points. So it's trading 24.87. That's my last price on the VIX, down 3 points. So we were, you know, we were up there on Friday near 28 points in VIX, which is extremely high. When you think about volatility and what that number is representing, I mean, that number is representing the amount of movement we might see in a typical year for the S&P 500. We're talking 28% was the prediction on Friday. It's down 3% today. So this is a roller coaster like we haven't seen in a long time in the VIX, and it might just be starting.
Well, where were we last Monday when you were in? Wasn't it like 22 or something?
Sure, we've been around 20 for about, call it 3 weeks.
Where did, Kevin Reardon used to come on the show and he was a big Fibonacci. Where did the two-thirds part come from? They said it was a law of nature that things come back two-thirds. Where did that even come from that guy? I have no idea.
If you pull up Fibonacci on Google, they'll show you a seashell. And the seashell has circular rings that go around it. And if you measure the circular rings, you notice that it falls in that two-thirds, one-third pattern. And you can attribute the same number. And you see that all throughout nature, actually, to be honest with you. It's pretty fascinating. And you can start applying those numbers to a lot of things in life and in trading and in gambling. You name it, Fibonacci number can pop up and be used for everything. And it's just amazing statistical approach to making sense of the nonsensical, or really the unpredictable. So,
well, gambling, what does that mean? I win two-thirds of the time, or I lose two-thirds of the time?
I mean, I lose 100% of the time, so it's hard to say.
No, your wife wouldn't like it if you started growing those Fibonacci beards.
No, I don't think I could get away with even a week of that, to be honest with you.
His was a lifetime commitment, I think, that beard. But anyway, so, I mean, we're starting to see the bond market having the same kind of volatility. But is it just going to be volatile, Mike, or is it as a preclude to something? I mean, right now we're violent. I looked at this, like, silver and gold. I mean, I've never seen, I haven't recently seen that I can remember, violent moves in a commodity, but within a range. We actually broke out of the bottom part of the range a little bit. Does that mean we're just going to do that? We're going to go from 100 to 120 and back and forth, and everything we're looking at violently, but it never breaks out of the 100 to 120? Or is it a precursor to one day we're going to be 150 or 80?
Yeah, I think it's a precursor, to be honest with you. When you see periods of extreme movement in the market, nothing stays in a range forever. I mean, we know that as a fact, especially the longer you've been trading, the more you recognize that ranges are there until they're gone, but they always do disappear at some point. So I don't think we'll stay in a range, but I do think if we see this type of movement, it's a precursor to extreme movement, possibly going forward. And again, that's being picked up in the volatility numbers across the board, and volatility is at 21% for gold right now.
What do you make of I always intend to wind the end of this subject a little bit, because I don't know why, because you understand and always have good comments, but we're talking as the end of last week. Of course, they don't put it out on Thursday anymore. They wait until Friday. I don't know if they want to tell us or what. The Fed balance sheet is now $7,590,000,000, and we passed that bill from the House this weekend. Are we talking, you know, pushing $10 trillion by July? I mean, what are we doing, Mike? I mean, there's got to be a spot here where we all drop in the middle of the ocean. I mean, maybe not. Obviously, the people who think we've gotten away with it so far say keep going, you know, type of thing. But,
I don't know how long it'll keep going. I think we're buying time. I mean, I've said this for about a year. I think we're buying time, and I think you can't just keep buying time. And, you know, someday that, by its very nature, is something that you have to repay in the future. So we're leveraging the future, but how much more future can we leverage at this point when we're talking, $10 trillion is possibly by July. These are ridiculous numbers. We've never seen numbers like this before. This is an experiment, and I think it's a it's interesting to watch real time. But gosh, you know, when you start doing, when you start believing that economics is still a science, things don't add up for a very long time. Short time, okay, but long time. We've been doing this for a while. It, I have a hard time believing they can keep this up without a major crack or a major correction, call it, in the market.
Well, Mike, I'm happy they don't invite me on national shows, because I wouldn't last very long, because when they start talking about this being a fiscal stimulus, first of all, it's not, because...
Right.
Well, let me ask you this, though. Out of the $1.9 trillion, say that's the number we come up with, I'm going to say fiscal stimulus, by definition, for like years and years and years, has been you go out and borrow money, the government borrows money from people, and you turn around and you spend it. And what you pick up on is the part that other people would have saved, you don't save. So you take 10 to 15 or 20%, whatever you think your savings rate's going to be, consumption, and you make it current versus further out. But you even can't do that for such a long period of time, because savings equal investment. And if you want investment at all, there has to be some savings, and you just scooped out the savings. But
right.
Out of this $1.9 trillion, how much of it is going to be borrowing versus how much printed, in your opinion? I mean, I don't know. I mean, I haven't gone through the calculation in my own feeble brain.
Well, my guess is there's going to be a lot more printed than the traditional way of doing it, because that's what we have been doing. That's the model that we've been following, is printing more money. And let's be honest, we know long-term printing more money is not a solution. It causes more problems. The question is, when the whole world is printing more money, you know, where does the, I don't know, I'm trying to think of an analogy, but the musical chairs, when does it end?
Well, it reminds me of... sort of being in college when a guy showed up with a case of beer and you knew he only drank six.
Yeah.
But finally you get the 15th guy doing that and you go, we've had enough beer. I mean, I'm gonna say they borrow maybe a quarter of it or 20% of it. It is so easy to just go the other way.
Yeah.
I mean, why?
Especially when you're doing it every, 3 months?
Yeah.
When you're adding this type of stimulus. You can only do so much on the savings part until you exhaust that as well.
Well, plus a lot of people don't, it is, I'm going to say illegal. Let's put it this way. It's immoral, illegal. They wouldn't give Caesar this power to just print the money and spend it. So they actually do go out and borrow it, right, Mike? And then the minute they borrow it, the Fed runs and buys it back, which means that the Goldman Sachs's of the world get commissions on both sides, right?
Yeah.
And they know one guy's buying, the other guy's selling, so they get to front run both orders, right?
Yeah, it'd be nice to be sitting on one of those desks.
Oh, God.
Feel like a genius.
Why do you think, I mean, the J.P. Morgans, those guys had such a great trading quarter last quarter to trade in the Fed stuff?
Yeah, absolutely.
I mean, that's why, who's the guy, the governor of New Jersey that ended up riding the one company into the ground, was in 2007 or 2008. What the hell is his name?
I can't remember.
You know what I'm talking about? He came. He was a senator, and he was a governor of New Jersey. He was the guy who was in the car crash. Then he ended up being...
I remember the story. I just can't think of his name.
But he couldn't wait to become a prime dealer, which is what people that actually do the Fed stuff, right?
Yeah.
I can't remember the dude's name, but it was... anyway, but... Yeah, I mean, there's a lot of money in that. I mean, we gotta, let's put it this way: if PTI could do that, we'd be swimming. We'd be swimming in the nice lagoon with the small bar, right? So do you have a prediction? I mean, Friday was obviously one way. You see the Dow doing one thing. Also, we've got the stocks that have been leading us. Apple and Microsoft are now the part that goes over the fence last, and other places are now the Caterpillars and the John Deeres. Is that because they have pricing power, Mike? Why all of a sudden are they taking over? They're like 20 times earnings, Caterpillar. That's unheard of.
I mean, it's hard to say. I think, you know, those stocks have been beat up so much that we're just seeing maybe a rotation. But I do like the idea more so that we're seeing extreme volatility. We're seeing price movements that are much larger than normal. This has been developing. This isn't new this past 3-day, 5-day period. This has been developing slowly, and the price swings are getting more dramatic. Volatility is creeping back up. It'll be real interesting. Watch that 30 handle in the VIX. And if we start going over 30 or consistently staying over 30 in the VIX, we're in a paradigm shift of a new trading environment. So recognize that 30 level is a major point.
Thank you, Mike. Are you tomorrow or Jeff?
That'll be me tomorrow.
Oh, great. We'll talk to you tomorrow. We'll finish that story. SP Fear is up 44 now. NASDAQ Fear is up 165. It's the highest we've seen it. Back tomorrow, Stocks and Jacks.
Hey, guys. What's up, G? Want to go to Tchotchke's? Get some coffee?
A little early.
I gotta get out of here. I think I'm gonna lose it.
Uh-oh. Sounds like somebody's got a case of the Mondays.
Stocks and Jocks is brought to you by PTI Securities and Futures. Go to ptisecurities.com. PTI Pro Direct. Trade for as low as a penny per share and a dollar per option contract. Learn more at ptiprodirect.com. Nadex. Offering an intuitive way to trade the financial markets. Visit nadex.com. Home Source Realty. Call Audrey Johnson at 708-349-3456. Hamzy Analytics. Listen to Fari Hamzy every other Thursday and visit HamzyAnalytics.com. ChiroMed. Back or neck pain? Schedule a complimentary consultation by calling 708-403-2727. DAX Research. Tune in for David Andelman's technical analysis on Mondays and Thursdays and call 1-800-821-4968.